Good afternoon. This is Ed Walsh with the Mahomet Citizen for the week of August 19th, 2019. We will begin today's reading on the front page with this article. It's under the banner of Mahomet Seymour Junior High School. The headline reads, Smoothing Out the Schedule. Officials address concerns to improve flow at building. A list of concerns regarding student schedules at Mahomet Seymour Junior High School is now a roster of proposed solutions in the works as the 2019 and 20 school year begins today, with young people back in the halls of Mahomet Seymour Schools as of this morning. One of the biggest changes in the district is the new lineup for junior high schoolers, ranging from physical education classes versus recess, juggling health and PE, the lunch schedule, and flexibility for special education. Nathan Mills, principal at the junior high, offered details of the changes. A slate of six top concerns with the old schedule started with zero-hour foreign language students arriving after the 8:15 a.m. school start time. Those students receive high school credit for the class, but must spend a set amount of time in it. Under the old system, Mills said, that meant that school traffic and other factors had this set of youth getting to their first period classes late. No matter what we did getting to the classroom, there were a couple or two or 3 minutes late every day, so that was a concern, he said. So to combat that, we're going to actually start each day with a homeroom. That way, the first several minutes of the school day remain flexible, allowing for announcements, check-in, and letting those foreign language class students arrive without missing other instruction at the start of the day. A second area identified as a challenge was physical education class being held during lunch periods and sharing space with recess. We do have two gyms, Mills noted, dubbed the Orange Gym and the Blue Gym. But when P.E. was in the winter months, when recess would coincide, they would go to the Blue Gym. So that puts 120 kids in the Orange Gym for P.E. That's a lot of kids in a little space. So getting P.E. off the lunch periods should alleviate that problem, he said. Now in the winter months, if we want to use both gyms, they'll be available. But now there are doors from the cafeteria to the Orange Gym, so the kids that want to go and shoot hoops, bump a volleyball, play catch, whatever, they'll be able to just walk over to the Orange Gym and it won't interfere with PE and what's going on there. That was a huge one, Mills added, of the junior high's room for improvement in student flow. It just wasn't a good situation. A third issue noted as a concern was having health instruction during PE. Mills said that previously Wednesdays was a health curriculum day, but now the students will have a quarter of health instruction, utilizing the cafeteria as a classroom, instead of PE being interrupted in their schedules every week. Fourth, the student lunch schedule has been adjusted, the principal explained. Previously, the way lunches were set up, the lunch periods were 40 minutes long. That's 20 minutes. The boys would come in and eat lunch. The girls would go outside. They would flip-flop, so they never got to interact during lunch, Mills said. It's important for the kids in this, developmentally, to be together. My hope is that, no, it's not going to be perfect, but the boys won't do some of the childish behavior because the girls will be sitting next to them. And developmentally, they need those interactions, he added. They need that. That's important. As part of this change, a new outside area for students is now ready, with metal picnic tables and also giant limestone rocks where students can sit, plus a nearby shade tree. This is located just outside the cafeteria to the west of the door near the stage in that large room. When it's nice, the students will be able to go outside, Mills said. I'm excited at what that is going to entail. Fifth, junior high leaders were concerned about the essentials class schedule for students. Previously, those in band participated in an hour for band Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. An hour for chorus was held Tuesdays and Thursdays. That meant that, for example, A student participating in band would only have an essential course on Tuesday and Thursday, mixing up the schedules and set of students for the teachers. The issue was the essential teachers, the arts, STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, and tech on Mondays, they had a different roster. On Tuesdays, they had a different roster because of band and chorus. And then 5 days a week, they'd have certain students who weren't in band and chorus, Mills explained. So it was very confusing. To address this, the junior high schedule now makes formerly semester-long classes into year-long courses, for example. Therefore, if one particular student does not have band or chorus, he will go to art on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays the first semester, and STEM on Tuesdays and Thursdays. In the second semester, that schedule will flip-flop, Millers explained. Across the year, they have the same amount of days, he said. The teacher now has a Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule and a Tuesday, Thursday. We're going to try that. Will it be perfect? Probably not, but it'll be much better. Finally, the sixth concern addressed is special education flexibility. Because we have teams, we had students who follow each other all day long, Mills explained. If, for example, two of those young people clash, they remain in the same classes all day, every day. Now, this year, what's going to happen is the kids will be on a team for the majority of the day, but will split and go to a different team for some courses, he said. It'll be good, adding that flexibility piece. The junior high building itself remains overcrowded, the principal noted. Early figures show that the facility, originally built to accommodate roughly 600 students, will host about 760 pupils for this new school year. Next on the front page, we have this article. It's under the banner of Muhammad Annexations. The headline reads, Homeowner presses board for details on tax rebates. Village lawyer hopes to have plan to present in near future. The battle over a set of annexations approved by the village of Muhammad in the spring isn't over, according to one resident who addressed the Board of Trustees on Tuesday night regarding proposed tax rebates for newly annexed residents. In the meantime, village leaders say they continue to aim for an amenable solution. In April, trustees voted unanimously to approve resolutions to annex Briarcliff and Summit Ridge subdivisions and to annex land that includes Tin Cup Campground. Property owners whose homes are included in the annexations, which were hotly opposed by many residents, include Rich Erdley, who lives on Caradan Drive in Summit Ridge. He addressed village leaders multiple times throughout the annexation debate, and he spoke to the trustees in the public comment portion of their special meeting Tuesday to ask for an update on tax rebates discussed for the newly annexed taxpayers. We want something in writing about the tax rebates, Erdley said. He made the same request of the village in June. Erdley said he spoke multiple times with village president Sean Widener, who then referred him to village attorney Joe Chamley. But Erdley said he still has not gotten the information he requested. I didn't do this. You did this, he told trustees about annexation. It's your responsibility to figure out how to handle tax rebates. This probably should have been done at the time you voted to force us into the village. All we're trying to do is make sure that we're getting what you said you're going to give us. Chamley said Tuesday that he is happy to take Erdley's input on how to implement tax rebates for the newly annexed residents. I do have some ideas as to how we're going to structure this, Chamley said. As the mayor indicated, previous transactions were development agreements. That's really not feasible in this scenario with the number of lots we have. The attorney said he's working on the issue. It's on my list. It's certainly on my agenda, Rich, he told Erdley. It's not being ignored. Absolutely not. I understand your concern. Chamley said he hopes to be able to share with village leaders a plan regarding proposed tax rebates by September or October. Trustee Andy Harpst asked about possible legal action from any newly annexed residents. Is that happening, or is there still talk of that? Harpst asked. Erdley replied, There's talk of that, yes, but one of the things we need is that document to help us make a decision. Yes, we're still considering legal action, but we need that document to see what's going to be affected, if there's legal action, and what's going to happen, he added. We need to know what the playing field is. Widener noted, the tax rebates was an optional piece of that annexation puzzle. This board had no obligation to offer anything with annexation. With that being said, we'll get back to you. Newly annexed residents have been offered 3 years total in tax rebates, the taxes they would be scheduled to pay to the village in the first 3 years. They are within Mahomet Village limits, would be returned to them. But a lawsuit likely would change that offer, Widener explained to the citizen on Wednesday morning. If we get a lawsuit that challenges annexation, which is their decision, we were not going to take those monies and basically rebate them and expend legal monies to defend the action, he said. Every indication that they provide is, we'll see you in court. He noted that each of the three annexations would be treated separately, so that, for example, if Summit Ridge residents decided collectively to file a lawsuit, but Briarcliff homeowners did not, tax rebates could still be offered to the latter. Our intentions have not changed. We're trying to find an amenable solution to this thing, Widener said. And this section is under the heading of Grant Application Approved. The primary reason behind Tuesday's special meeting of village trustees was to vote on whether to apply for a grant for improvements to Barber Park. Trustees unanimously agreed to the move, which was explained by Dan Waldinger, director of Mahomet's Parks and Recreation Department. The Open Space Land Acquisition and Development, or OSLAD, grant from the Illinois Department of Natural Resources would match up to $400,000 in village funds to spruce up Barber Park. Waldinger presented plans that include additions such as a playground spray ground, an improved amphitheater and pavilion space to the 55-acre park located along the Sangamon River. The cost of Phase 1 proposed improvements to what Waldinger called our premier park is estimated at $830,000. Any efforts to add to or change the park are made with the proximity to the Sangamon in mind, he said. We're very conscious of the potential for flooding, so much of the area in the floodplain is going to remain the same as you see it today, Waldinger said. He added, what we're talking development-wise is really raising the fields more to the level of Field 2 to get everything above the floodplain. It would give us a lot more flexibility in our field space. We can host more games. Under the heading of study session held, festival volunteers needed. Immediately after the special meeting Tuesday, trustees held a study session that included moving equipment purchases for the Public Works Department to the consent agenda for the next meeting scheduled for 6 p.m. Tuesday. In the mayor's report, Widener noted upcoming issues, including expected approval of the downtown master plan in September, discussion on adult-use cannabis in October, and review of a citizen advisory group related to the Economic Development Commission in November. Harpst asked about the newly acquired land just east of the village administrative building. Village Administrator Patrick Brown said one of the three homes on the property purchased through the Wayne Perkins Trust remains occupied, and it is expected to be vacated sometime in September. The village will proceed with demolition soon thereafter, Brown said. Finally, just before adjournment, trustees called for more volunteers for the August 23rd to 24th Mahomet Music Festival. Even just an hour of time, Widener said. We definitely need help, Brown noted. Next up on page A2, we have the 10-Question Friday. Each week we interview a familiar face in town. This week, Dustin Day chats with the Mahomet Citizen's Penny Weaver. Dustin Day is the new assistant principal at Middletown Prairie Elementary School in the Mahomet Seymour School District. This is his 15th year in education. Good teaching and excited learners still put a smile on his face. He has spent 8 years teaching kindergarten and first grade, 5 years as a data and instructional facilitator, and 2 years as an administrative intern. Dustin is married to Danielle, a former first grade and kindergarten teacher at Mahomet. They have 3 boys, Wyatt 9, Colton 5, and Nolan 1. Day said he is beyond excited to have the opportunity to support the students, staff, and parents of Middletown Prairie. So, question number one, if you didn't have to sleep, what would you do with the extra time? With extra time, I would love to take my wife on a date, exercise, read a book, make sawdust, be better organized, travel, and plan activities for my kids. Question two, what hobby would you get into if time and money weren't an issue? I've always been happy being planted as a small town boy, but lately the desire to travel and see the world has started to grow. Question three, what could you give a 45-minute presentation on with absolutely no preparation? I could present on various educational topics, but it is those small group conversations with other teachers that get me excited to try and learn new things. Question four, when you're old, what do you think children will ask you to tell a story about? In the distant future, when I have grandkids, I hope my sons remember me as a good dad and ask me about those moments that challenged me as a father. Question five, what's the favorite piece of clothing you own or did own, and why? My Carhartt pants are currently my favorite piece of clothing, and they look casual enough to wear to work, but also tough enough to work outside in. Question number six, what are the small things that would make your day better? Why is that? Amazing teaching makes me smile. I love to see kids engaged and excited to be learning. If I am having a hard day, I will often find a teacher that creates an amazing learning culture and just observe that room for a while. Question seven, what's the luckiest thing that has happened to you and when did it occur? I was born and married into supportive families. I'm very aware that not every child is this lucky. Question eight, what is one of your favorite smells? The best smells happen at Granny's house before holiday meals. Question nine, what fictional place would you most like to go to? I would like to take a stroll through Hogwarts, play in the holodeck on the Enterprise, eat some of Wonka's chocolate, scratch a lion behind the ears on Narnia, or just chill in a galaxy far, far away. Question 10. If you could give advice based on your knowledge today to yourself as a 20-year-old, what would it be? I would tell myself to read more books, keep working hard, choose joy, and be happy because one day you will have an amazing family and your dream job at an amazing school district. And since we couldn't stop at 10, we got one bonus question. What gets you fired up? Teachers that are passionate for teaching get me fired up. And now, turning to page A3, under obituaries, we have the following death notices of local and area interest. Dorothy J. Hanna, 76, of Mahomet, passed away at 10:21 a.m. Friday, August 9, 2019, at Clark Lindsay Village in Urbana. Funeral services were at 9 a.m. Wednesday, August 14, 2019, at Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton, with the Reverend Mike Taylor officiating. Burial followed at Mausoleum Park Cemetery in Clinton. Visitation was from 5 to 7 Tuesday, August 13th, at the funeral home. Geraldine Ruth Price, 82, formerly of Mahomet, passed away on Friday, August 9th, 2019, at Farmer City Rehab Center. A visitation was from 11 a.m. to noon, Tuesday, August 13th, at Blair Owens Funeral Home, 102 East Dunbar Street in Mahomet. Funeral services followed at noon at the funeral home, with the Reverend Dave Ashby officiating. Her final resting place is in Riverside Cemetery in Mahomet. Joanne Marie Reckemer, 91, of Champaign, died at 5:24 p.m. Wednesday, August 7, 2019, at Country Health Care in Gifford, with family by her side. Funeral services were graveside in Villa Grove at 10 a.m. Saturday, August 10th, in the Centennial Cemetery in Villa Grove, Illinois. Memorials may be made to the Alzheimer's Association. Harriet McLaughlin Rose, 85, of Mahomet, formerly of Charleston, passed away Monday, August 5th, 2019. A celebration of life service was held in Harriet's honor at 5 p.m. Sunday, August 11th, 2019, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 710 North Neal Street in Champaign. Visitation was held prior from 3:30 p.m. to 5 p.m. at the funeral home. Her final resting place will be Coulterville City Cemetery. Edda Spencer, 102, of Carmel, Indiana, passed away at 4 p.m. Friday, August 9, 2019, at Carmel Care Center. Edda was born in Farmington on March 31, 1917. Edda was a graduate of Farmington High School and Brown's Business School. She was a small business owner for much of her life. After operating a small resort in Hot Springs, Arkansas, she and her husband returned to Illinois to raise their two daughters in Fairmount, where they owned Spencer's Cafe for nearly 20 years. Edna reinvented herself many times through the years. She worked several years in the Vermilion County State's Attorney's Office, and as a kitchen designer for Cash and Carry Lumber Yard in Danville. She was a past president of the Business and Professional Women's Club and member of Women in Construction. She was always in motion. After retirement, she continued working in retail and the restaurant business until age 89. A celebration of Edda's life was at 1 p.m. Saturday, August 17, 2019, at the home of Susan and Dennis Mills. And now, returning to the news and views on page A3, we have this article. It's under the banner of Agriculture Technology, and the headline reads, Workshop to Focus on Soil. Measure what's underground Monday when Ken Dallenberg, owner of Scattered Acres Farm near Mansfield and Traced Genomics, host Soil at Work. According to a news release, the free two-hour workshop and dinner cover the importance of soil microbiology to successful crop management and introduces groundbreaking technology that provides actionable, in-depth soil biology data. Attendees earn 0.5 continuing education units in soil and water management. This new technology eliminates the guesswork about what's under our feet, said Dallenberg, who has grown corn and soybeans west of Champaign for over 40 years and is an early adopter of agriculture technology. His farm has been the site of many projects to evaluate precision farming technology and other innovative products and practices. Soil is a living network of billions of organisms that provide an environment for the crop. Its biology explains why certain areas are more productive than others and reveals soil-borne diseases that may be lurking. Soil is a grower's most valuable asset, said Pat Dornstra, row crop business lead with Trace Genomics, a company that can now profile soil's DNA. Thanks to new technology, agronomists and farmers are in a position to know as much about the soil as they do about what's happening above ground. Simply collect and send samples with a soil collection kit. Trace Genomics then uses a proprietary DNA extraction and sequencing process to identify and quantify millions of microbes in the soil. The data is decoded using high-speed, cost-efficient data analysis to compare against a large and growing set of soil data. Trace genomics then helps growers make the best decisions for their fields. Soil at Work will be held at I Hotel and Conference Center, 1900 South 1st Street in Champaign, from 5 to 7 p.m. Register online at www.tracegenomics.com or call Trace Genomics at 650-332-6661. And now returning to the news and views on page A8, under the banner of 30 years of military service, we have this article headlined, Muhammad Mann Served with the Best. Everywhere from Okinawa to Kuwait, runways and heliports have to be built or repaired, even under missile fire. Marine Gordon Heeb, 51, retired in January after 30 years of service. Master Gunnery Sergeant is the highest enlisted rank. He has got a new job and won't retire again soon. Growing up in Washington State, he played football, basketball, and baseball. He worked in construction for a couple of years. He figures some of those skills were attractive to the Corps. I knew the Marines were the best, he said of his decision to enlist at 20. One of the reasons he's proud of being a Marine, surviving the demanding 13-week boot camp, said the former recruiter. He did basic training in San Diego in 1988. He was sent to Okinawa to build bridges as well as runways for Osprey helicopters, which have both vertical takeoff and landing options. You can put together the aluminum helipads very quickly, Heeb said. He was in Korea the same year after training in topographical surveying and drafting. He was sent to Marine Corps Air Station El Toro near Irvine, California. I think they call it Irvine, actually. The Gulf War began in August 1990 after Iraq's invasion of Kuwait. Air power dominated the war. Desert Storm was the 100-hour war, with coalition air power completely dominating Saddam Hussein's army. It's also been nicknamed the Video Game War because television news was dominated by watching one target being hit after another. But Hussein did fight back with Scud missiles created by the Soviet Union during the Cold War and distributed heavily to Second and Third World countries that might one day threaten the United States. The Scud missiles were numerous almost every night, he remembered vividly. At the time, personnel had to don nuclear, biological, and chemical suits because there was no way to know what the missiles carried, he said. The desert heat took its toll. It was always 100 degrees, 110, he said, which made suiting up even more uncomfortable. Worse was the unknown. What was the payload the missiles were carrying? Numerous guys in my platoon were stressed out and took off their masks, he said. And guys got claustrophobia in the bunkers. We were 20, 21. He spent 7 months in Saudi Arabia and Bahrain in support of the 3rd Marine Aircraft Wing as a Lance Corporal. In 1991, his unit was called back. It was early that year that a Scud missile landed near his engineering compound. No one was killed, but the experience was unforgettable, he said. He was very glad to return home. It was great to get back to my family from the desert, Heeb said. He spent much of the rest of his time in recruiting, rising in the ranks, and now uses those skills in his new job. The family moved to the area because daughter Ireland was recruited to the Eastern Illinois University volleyball team. This has been the Muhammad Citizen for the week of August 19th, 2019. I look forward to reading with you again soon. For Illinois Radio Reader, I'm Ed Walsh.